Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 381.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we carefully remove pieces of candy from our children's hall so as not to be detected. So I still think they have a lot of candy in there, but they're slowly losing pieces mysteriously in the mouths of their parents. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I have been just like very discreetly stealing pieces of candy from my daughter. And I'm doing it in the name of her health. Okay. I'm being a good parent, and teaching her that in some occasions stealing is right. Today, we are going to talk about where you should absolutely not take someone on a first date. We're also going to get into the political hodgepodge that is, the current state of the political climate. We'll finally talk about which countries are the most promiscuous. I mean, this is the kind of data I live for. Folks, we have such a phenomenal panel for you today. I can't even express how excited I am by this panel. And I'm what they call slightly under the weather. So, like, this is an especially fantastic panel for how I'm feeling, because I can listen to them talk for hours, and I know you can too. First up, we have, for the one gajillionth time, he is a comedian, he is a writer, he's a producer, you've seen him in stages around the country. He is the wonderful Benari Lee Poulton. Hey, Benari.
Hey, so great to be back. For the one gajillionth time, I just got my card punched, so I think the next podcast is free.
Yeah. And folks, you get also on the show today. I was just with him at the Kennedy Center. We rarely get to be in the same room together, but we got to be in the August Kennedy Center together just 2 weeks ago. I'll tell you why. Because he does gigs like that, just fancy locations. Fancy televisions, fancy he writes books. He's a comedian of the first order. He is the wonderful Corey Ryan Forrester. Hey, Corey.
Hey, Nagin. Have you entertained the thought that perhaps you're sick because you ate too much of your children's candy? And I ask because I've been told by the media that often people slip poison and drugs in them. So perhaps you should be looking to the Tootsie Pop for your illness.
Yeah, you got fentanyl'd.
That's right.
Oh my God.
You're having withdrawals right now.
Oh my God. That's crazy. First of all, do you guys remember? I think when we were kids, there was like a thing that they were putting razor blades.
Razor blades.
There was always razor blades.
Is that like for all time there was razor blades in apples
we've never addressed the idea that anyone
gives out apples. Yes.
Okay, we're not gonna. Okay, sorry.
If you want a kid to eat a razor blade, don't put it in an apple.
Right.
That shit's gotta go in a Mars bar or something.
Am I crazy that there's some memory in my mind that razor blades were in apples? But that's
not. We were told that.
Yes. That's what we were told.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's why children do not eat fruits or vegetables.
Okay. Exactly. They're just out of safety. Yes, out of safety. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure like the Nestle Corporation put that rumor out to steer kids towards chocolate.
And
like,
you know what? It worked.
It's gotta be wrapped.
In my community, there was a fellow who we weren't allowed to go to his house to trick or treat because it was rumored that he put cyanide capsules in the kale smoothies that he passed out there.
That's right. And the, all the gyms are haunted with can the
I
ghosts. Say,
well, of- can I give you guys like a cute little detail about New York City, which is that, you know, for people who don't know, in New York City, we trick or treat at storefronts. I mean, there's some neighborhoods right. where they're like, you could trick or treat in front of a, like at a townhouse or whatever, but like, by and large, kids are trick, and then you can trick or treat in a building, like, so go door to door in an apartment right. building. But I'd say a very large part of people just trick or treat at storefronts, and we stopped by the Chinese takeout joint, and they gave us fortune cookies,
there
and I
go.
Thought that was so perfect. My daughter was like, "What's this? She's never seen it. She's four, right? So she's never seen a fortune cookie before." And I was like, "You know what? I'm gonna explain that later." And don't worry, just know that a cool thing just happened to you.
Fantastic.
Probably less exciting than, you know, the Reese's peanut butter cups, but still it's cool. It's a cool thing. Folks, before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners that they can go to patreon.com/NagineFarsad to support the show for as little as $4 a month. $4 a month will get you, I don't know, like 25 fortune cookies. So forego those 25 fortune cookie your fortune cookie budget, and instead support Fake the Nation at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And now let us get into it with topic number one. Okay, so a 40-year-old former military dude turned trucker turned to the internet to figure out what kind of first dates women want to go on.
Feeling a little attacked here. And of course, my opinions on dating have in no way anything to do with the United States Army or reflect the opinions of the U.S. military, the government, coalition forces, or anyone real or imagined. Just throwing that out there.
He was in the military, folks. So Benari knows this guy specifically. So now this guy took to the internet to figure out what kind of first dates women want to go on. And this is what he said. He said, quote, "Women want great conversation, you want to feel excitement, and you want to learn, and that's not really asking for much." Now, this all came about because of a viral TikTok video that showed a woman refusing to get out of a car when she realized that the date was taking her to a Cheesecake Factory. So my first question for the both of you is, what do you think of the Cheesecake Factory? I mean, just heretofore, what have you thought of it? And is it a legitimate first date spot? I mean, were you surprised by this woman's reaction?
I was not surprised by that woman's reaction because I know what maybe the rest of the world doesn't know, that women are equally, if not more, shallow than men when it comes to dating in certain ways. But here's the thing. I used to have a big aversion to chain restaurants back when I was in my only go to microbrews and listen to vinyl phase.
Yeah.
But listen, now in this economy, when you see a good deal, you got to take it. And if there's a chain restaurant, you know that like it can't be that bad because they made 40 of them. You know what I'm saying? And as far as a first date goes, the Cheesecake Factory is basically the food court of dine-in restaurants. There's something for everyone. So instead of having to go, I wonder what this person's tastes are, you can take them to Cheesecake Factory where the menu is the size of a phone book. And I mean, look, I think if you're a dude and you like the Cheesecake Factory, that's where you should take a woman. And if she is going to discount your relationship based purely on that, you did not need to be with this person anyways.
I think going to the Cheesecake Factory is actually the equivalent of moving too fast. Because that's not a first date.
Yes!
That's you've been married for seven
that's
fucking
right.
years.
That's
and
right.
I don't know where you want to go. You know what? We're all just going to the Cheesecake Factory again. That's like you get out and you're like, oh shit, I've been in like that. You can't start at the Cheesecake Factory. You're going to end up at
yeah,
the Cheesecake Factory.
Benari, I cannot agree with you more. The Cheesecake Factory is where relationships go to feel stable. It's like
IKEA.
Yeah, yeah, you don't need to think anymore. You're just like, should we just ironically go to the Cheesecake Factory
yeah.
while recognizing that we shouldn't be going there? But like, occasionally I like a different slice of, by the way, do people actually go for the cheesecake? I mean, it just sounds like the cheesecake is secondary at this point. I don't know. I haven't, honestly, I think I went to one once in Las Vegas when I was in Las Vegas for 3 hours, like 10 years ago, but otherwise.
More Nagin humble bragging.
Yeah. Real brag there.
The Cheesecake Factory in Vegas.
That's right. The best one.
But okay, so here's another one that I'm confused. I would like to hear your takes on. Another video went viral, or a tweet went viral, because a woman complained about a Hinge date proposing to go to a bar too close to his apartment. Mm. Legit or nay, Corey?
Well, I, being a white man, I know we often try to speak for women, but I can't and I shan't. I could understand why in this world on internet dating, why a woman would be a little reluctant to not want to get liquored up within walking distance to a stranger's home. I don't know how he pitched this to her. Like, it also seems like here's a guy who is not going to want to go out of his way for you. Like, hey, let's make this very convenient for me. You get dressed up, you come to me, I just walk downstairs. I mean, realistically, it doesn't sound that bad, but you're already going into this date like, I don't know this guy and he could be Son of Sam.
Yeah, the move for, and again, that's like a third date move, right? Yep. The bar close to you is like, you know what? Let's just go hang out at the bar. I know this great place near me, whatever. Because then, you know, you've gotten to know each other
a little bit. Yeah, boning.
Because that, you know, you're just throwing it out there casually of like that option's on the table. But for a first date, it's a real kind of, it's not just aggressive. Like Corey was saying, it's lazy. You're saying, I don't really want to go anywhere. I haven't broadened my horizons enough to know of anything beyond, you know, my local vicinity. You're not putting a good vibe out there. You know, trying, the first date should be something that's kind of like fun, but also neutral. On neutral territory where no one has the upper hand, really.
Yes.
You know, and any decision can be made at any given moment.
That's right. Just like the Georgia Florida game. I agree. And also I'm back to agreeing with Benari on the fact that the going to a bar near your house seems like you don't do that on the first date for sure, but you definitely do that before you go to the Cheesecake Factory, because now you've convinced me that you're right. I've never been in a
cheesecake.
Like, I've never been. Me and my wife have been in the Cheesecake Factory, and now that I think about it, every single person in that room was 100% already in a married, committed relationship. You don't get to know somebody at the Cheesecake Factory. You reluctantly go to the Cheesecake Factory because nobody wants to make a decision.
That's right. And you know too much about this person.
Exactly.
You know too much.
I also love, like, Benari is doing this like a historian with a timeline. Like, this is like, you know, first it's this, second it's the bar that's close, third is the...
I'm not trying to rules of the game this shit, but like, come on, there's some common sense things here where, like, just as a human being operating in the world, like, try and make the effort toward the other person.
Can I say that I have exercised my female privilege. This is maybe the only privilege that I have had as a female, which is that I would, when I was online dating, I was really like, I would be the one that emailed the dude. I would be the one to be like, okay, cool, let's go on a date. And then they would be like, oh, what did you have in mind? I'd be like, we're going to go to this one bar that I always go to on my first dates. It's going to be 1 hour long, and then I will leave promptly after an hour, you know, and that's...
And I will send you my notes afterwards.
That's right.
My critique.
I'll let you know if there'll be a follow-up email. You'll hear from my assistant.
I ran the entire show, like 100%. And the bar was close to my apartment, not because of boning reasons, just because for me, this was just like, get it in, get it out. It's a chore. Like, I was like doing errands.
Just like your boning reasons.
But I was just like, I just want to saunter over to a bar real quick, figure out if I want to spend the rest of my life with this random guy, and then go back home. You know what I mean? Or go do a stand-up set or whatever. Like, I didn't want it to be inconvenient in any way.
But I feel like that's totally appropriate from the woman's perspective. But,
right, exactly.
I just feel like, in general, there's a lot more.
It's a different rule book.
A lot more risk that you're entering into.
That's right.
With this whole proposition.
By the way, yeah. And just to be clear, this list is the dude's list for his heterosexual reality.
Here's what I really enjoyed about this article.
Yeah.
Was you could see in real time this dude experiencing what it's like to go to therapy. Like,
yes.
It's like, he's like, I was making these angry online YouTube videos or Facebook videos that no one was watching. And then I asked for feedback. And when I engaged in women as human beings, I actually learned something. And now my, like, it was incredible. I don't know the exact amount of self-awareness, but like reading through it, he's like, yeah, now I found out women just want to be listened to and heard. And it's like, it I don't know what wild. You were doing. I don't know what you were doing beforehand, man, but like, I'm glad you got there.
I was just
going
to take
him
to a ketamine bar and then go to my house and play video games, but, you know.
Apparently, just having like plastic and hardware lying around the back of your car and like ropes and stuff isn't a good, you know, sign to give women. So I stopped putting that in the back seat. You know, I'm just learning here.
It was really adorable. His list, by the way, I'll just read a few choice ones that I thought were interesting and places you should absolutely not take your lady. On a first date, Cheesecake Factory, Applebee's, Chili's, obviously top the list. The movies, for example, Your House, any fast food chain. The funny thing is he then goes on to list several fast food chains, but any fast food chain, church, the gym. By the way, who has taken their date
That's
to the gym?
Insane.
You are a crazy person. And then he compiled a list of acceptable places. And I'm just going to run a couple of these by you guys. He on the list of acceptable places to take a first date. Now I'm a little like I might have some pushback on some of these as a lady that could be on such a date. Top Golf, Dave and Buster, Main
Event, yeah, hell yeah,
which I don't even know what that is, and Zip Line.
What was that one?
Main Event. Have you? I don't know what that is.
Main Event. No, I assume it's like a bar that has a bunch of like TVs and shit. If I had to guess,
is it like a sports bar?
Probably. By the way, Dave and Buster's kind of covered this. I was going to throw out. I think Putt Putt is a wonderful first date.
Okay. Yes.
Mini golf, go karts,
so
anything that's
is Top Golf mini golf.
No, it's basically, so essentially Top Golf is sort of like the bowling of golf.
Yeah.
You have a lane, and like instead of playing around, you're hitting towards a target. So like even if you're not a big golfer, if you can just kind of smack the ball, it's kind of fun. But like in my opinion,
that's fair.
But in my opinion, you still like if you're not at all skilled at golf, it's not going to be fun to you. Whereas if you suck at bowling, you can still throw a ball down a lane.
Right.
And if you're and anyone can putt-putt, and I think the putt-putt is actually very important for the woman because you can learn exactly who a man is on the putt-putt course or at the go-kart track. And I say this coming from someone who went on a lot of putt-putt dates that did not result in a second date because of my behavior on the course. I used to bring my own putter.
I
would try to beat the shit out of them because I was like, oh, they want to be treated equal. And then go-karts, dude, I would put 8-year-olds into the wall. I was a maniac. So like, I think for a woman, it's a nice public space where you can truly see the inner workings of a man.
Yes. And miniature golf does make it onto this list. Also go painting. The gun range also made it onto this list. Again, I just want to say for the record, never in a million years should anyone invite me to the gun range. That is, I find
horrendous,
and I
hate
it.
I feel like some of the things that were listed, like the Top Golf or whatever, like they, there's a competitive angle to some of these places where you're having friendly competition. And I think that can be a real tricky thing. Like Corey was saying, because you kind of, if you're a very competitive person, you don't know how the other person takes it.
That's right.
Right. And so I think like it's the, If you're so competitive that you can't even like just have fun on a first date doing a simple thing like bowling or playing golf, you know, that kind of type A personality, you know, shows that like, okay, you're very about yourself and not about like figuring out me or figuring out like what's going on here. So I think you got to do, if you're going to do something competitive, you got to be chill. That's it. You got to just be chill.
And I also want to say the three of us are stand-up comedians. Stand comedy show ended up at number 19 on this list. And I think that's a terrible idea. That's
awful,
a terrible idea.
Idea.
I don't know how that made it onto the list, but do not take a date to a comedy show.
It's not a good idea if you're watching someone else do stand-up.
Nope.
It's even worse if you're doing stand-up or they're doing stand-up.
Oh, yeah. Horrendous. And it doesn't give you an opportunity to chat.
Exactly. That's why the movie's out, too. Like, I used to think, oh, movie's great, because in my brain it was like, well, for 2 hours, you don't have to do any of the work. But then it's like, yeah, but you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't do anything. The only way that it works is if you do movie and then go to dinner afterwards so that you can discuss
right,
the movie.
Right, but then that's
you
not know a what first I mean? Date. That's like 1,000 hours of a date.
Agreed.
Like, what do we do?
Agreed, yeah. But no,
again,
comedy
now we're
show,
in the, like, second to fifth date territory.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm not trying to discourage people from coming to comedy shows, especially mine, but for the love of God, don't go on a first date at a comedy show. Nothing
yeah,
can be gained.
Please don't do that.
What I will say, though, is the only way that works is when you didn't know it was a first date.
There you go.
Like,
oh,
if you meet
yeah,
at the comedy
yeah,
show
yeah.
and, like,
yeah.
you have a fucking killer set.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about from us as a performance.
As a performer. Yeah, the only,
that's
the
true.
Only, the only I've time I've ever seen
yeah,
it
yeah.
successful is when you and or the other person. I mean, I met some women who just crushed it. And I'm like, I like her.
Yeah, because exactly. It's very attractive to see someone do well. Well, okay, folks, you let me know what's on your list of absolutely do not take me to this on a first date, or you should totally take me to this on a first date. I'm so curious to hear. Let's take a quick break, and when we are back, we'll get into the politics of it all.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back, and we're going to launch into topic number two, which is a political hodgepodge. There's a few stuff we're going to, few issues that we're going to talk about. Now, when it comes to the conflict in Gaza, everyone has feelings about it, or they can't admit that they don't understand enough about it to have feelings about it. Now, I'm happy to hear both of your general feelings about the horror that's going on. But we also, just to kind of anchor our conversation, read a piece in the Times called Dave Chappelle and the Perils of Button-Pushing Comedy. And in it, the writer reminds us that Chappelle did a bit after 9/11 where he pointed out that CNN or something had asked Ja Rule about his thoughts on 9/11.
Where is Ja?
And Chappelle said something like, "I want some answers that Ja Rule might not have right now." and the piece makes a case that, like, basically that Ja Rule bit, you know, aged really well because this is from the piece, social media has only amplified the opinions of the Ja Rules of the world. The algorithms that run our feeds are making sure you have Justin Bieber and Gigi Hadid to explain the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now, every corporation and middle school seems to have its own foreign policy. And I guess, do you feel right now that we are experiencing the sort of Ja Rulification of war punditry?
Well, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and that's just the nature of the beast. Because back in those days, like, there was no Twitter or whatever. So like Ja Rule had to actually like say something in front of a camera or whatever. But now, like, not only does everybody have their opinion, but there's this weird thing where, like, as comedians, no matter what your style is, there's a certain percentage of your fan base that, like, is waiting for you to say something. And if you don't, you'll get hit with that your silence on this issue is deafening or whatever. I know I've gotten that.
Yeah.
There's also, and I think the Ja Rulification is a really...
That's a great word.
Yeah, that's a terrific way to describe...
The Ja Rulification of war punditry.
It's a very hilarious way to describe a very horrific thing that is happening right now in which social media is a tool and instrument of warfare right now. And I can't stress this enough. The disinformation and misinformation is unprecedented. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I'm trying to say that the majority of kids right now get their news and information from TikTok.
Right.
That is being pushed. And I will say that TikTok, kids who get their information from TikTok are very anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian. It's not a two sides thing. It is very one-sided. For younger generations, primarily because forces that have their own agenda are pushing it. It's like 8,000 to 1 in terms of the accounts and what the algorithm pushes out. We know that the owner of X is not to be trusted. We can't trust Facebook. And the media itself uses social media to drive their news cycles now.
Click.
So it's not something that's separated. You know, the New York Times runs with things. So people that are masters of disinformation and misinformation right now are in control of how we get our information at all. And I just, you know, I think that that's, you know, we talk about the temperature rising and bringing it down. I think the first thing we have to do, this is, the, you know, you said this is a very emotional issue. And it is. It is actually more complicated than also people want to make it. But day by day, you just see the horror of this exact day without any of the additional context of it. And it can be discouraging, and it can also be make you angry. And I think people need to take a step back, especially in this country, and say, am I being driven to anger? Is this meant to cause a reaction in me that whether what that is putting me to do something that is negative into this world right now, or is this spurring me on to do something positive? And I think that that's really where we need to take stock in terms of how social media and the jar rulification comes into play here.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an insane hot button issue that, you know, complicated doesn't even begin to describe it, because it's one of the few hot button world issues that like has divided people who normally agree with each other on everything.
Yeah.
Like usually when something happens, if you're a little confused on where you should stand, you can go to like, here's the 10 political pundits that I normally go, yeah, I think they've got it right. And then they're 5-on-5 on both sides. And you're like, and so like, as a like liberal who wants to have the right take, you're like, oh shit, normally this is easy because like I usually just agree with what that person says, but that person is actually agreeing with my mom and they never agree on anything.
And then you have the additional, you know, very uncomfortable position of like an anti-Semite like Marjorie Taylor Greene suddenly becomes very pro-Israel.
Yes.
So on the surface, you're like, oh, well then I'm against that. But wait, she's also anti-Semitic. And then I think the left really has to come to terms with it's long been held that that a lot of the anti-Israel rhetoric was isolated and not anti-Semitic, but I think that you have to be careful if like you're just badgering American Jews,
right,
who may or may not have anything to do with Israel.
Yeah,
you're not being pro-Palestine and you're not being anti-Israel. You're just being anti-Semitic,
right?
And I think that this is just another thing to turn down the temperature, because you do have an imbalance here. Israel is an established country with a military and a government, and has to adhere to rules, which currently they are not.
Right.
And we have to be honest about that, that the overreaction, which was a known quantity, because this is how Israel proceeds militarily with a bombing campaign, right, against Hamas, which is in a densely populated civilian area. So that is understood that this was going to happen. But Hamas is not a government.
Right.
Yes, they run Gaza, but they are a terrorist organization that has taken over that. That's why there was a blockade from Egypt and Israel. And this started with a terrorist attack. And we have to look at what comes after this, because at some point there is an after. And I think anyone who is promoting an either or situation is not really a voice that's helpful at the moment. I think the United States position, I think Joe Biden's position has been good, which is at the end of this, there has to be a two-state solution. We have to get back to the table. You have Hamas, which is a terrorist organization, which cannot stay in charge of Gaza. The Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas need to be brought back in. And if that requires more support from the United States to help legitimize that, then that needs to happen. And they need to go back to administering Gaza. The settlements in the West Bank need to end. Netanyahu, who also doesn't believe in a two-state solution, he was an opponent to the Oslo Accords, you know, back in the 90s. He was a political opponent of Yitzhak Rabin. So you have two sides right now who are enmeshed in this,
who don't believe in a two-state solution.
Right.
It's kind of the only solution. You know what I mean, folks? It's like there's these two groups of people inextricably linked. They both can get what they want, and it's called two-state solution, and we need to like come back to the table. Why aren't we?
And
at
I
the
think
table?
It's very telling that when the president of the United States, Joe Biden, went over to Israel, he was treated as the leader of that country because their leader had failed them.
I think there's something really interesting, Corey. You mentioned like our, you know, there's people that normally agree that aren't agreeing, and it's weird. And there's, and it is a really, it is a complex issue. It is a complex issue, but there's also a simple concept at the heart of it. I think when it comes to, when it comes to the jolly rulification, and it, when it comes to reading your Instagram feed and feeling really annoyed by everybody, the simple concept, and this is something that I learned as a young child in the Iran-Iraq war, a war that nobody gave a shit about or whatever in the way that they care about this one. But it, during that war, I saw my family and friends or whatever be like, we fucking hate the Islamic Republic, and mm-hmm. but we're also in a war. Like, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And you have to be able to hold those two things in your head. And like, that's... Yes. And people do it all the time. You know what I mean? It's like not that big. I mean, that to me is simple. And I think we're looking at two different groups of people, Palestinians who are like, fucking Hamas is a terrorist organization and they suck. And Israelis who also might be like, Bibi Netanyahu is not great. You know, and but so it's like, it's okay to like have those things.
He's a very Trumpy-like leader right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, a part of the reason, look, he oversaw, this is the worst terrorist attack that Israel's ever encountered in their 75 years. And his whole shtick was, I'm the only guy that can keep you safe.
Yeah.
You know, but instead, he put all his efforts into overhauling the judiciary, which no one there asked for. He split his country. His country was distracted because 70% of his population was anti the political movements he was making, including a number of people in his own military. And so that... You know, but like you said, now they're at war. And the one thing we have to be careful with is when this war is over, that's the end of his political career. So as an ally, because Israel is the United States' ally, we have to be the adult in the room here and say, hey, you can't draw this out for an extended period of time to save your political career. Your country and the stability of that region and
depends on
and the lives of innocent Palestinians depend on us bringing a peaceful resolution to this. And so this is the United States' opportunity to step up on the world stage and be the world leader that we can be.
Beautiful, Benari. And now, folks, let me know what you think. I also, Corey, I've gotten messages being like, what are your thoughts? And you haven't said anything or whatever. And your silence is deafening and all that stuff. And I don't want to say something on social media because that one line of me saying something on social media is just not sufficient. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so
and
I
who
am
knows
like,
the context. Like,
yeah.
And I think, and this is not me trying to play the smallest fiddle for myself and play a victim here, but with my accent, I need I say more, but with my accent, like if I start talking some anti-Zionist stuff, there's going to be people that just hear my accent and go, he's being anti-Semitic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And for the record, obviously it's wrong to judge someone that way, but I get it because if you're a Jewish person in America, you've been conditioned to white man screaming, sounding like this, maybe not having good thoughts about you and your people. Do you know what I'm saying? But, you know, so I don't fucking, and also I'm wholly unqualified for it. Like I'm barely qualified to speak on the things that I do speak on, but like at least it's things like that happen in my region have
you
some.
You feel a little bit more authority on it. Yeah.
Yes. Though I really do my best to only like speak out when I'm like, this is coming from a place where you have personal experience with this issue or it happens in your region and you know enough people to where you can form an opinion and maybe your opinion needs to be heard. I don't know if this is it because, like I said, if I say one thing, it's going to sound anti-Semitic, but then if I say the complete other thing, it's going to sound like I'm pro-genocide, and I'm neither of those things. I'm neither of those things at all. I do think it's possible to have the opinion what the state of Israel doing is bad. Also, terrorism
is
not good either. Yeah.
And also just like negotiation and getting to the table and talking it out and figuring it out are like always good. Diplomacy is always good.
Thank you for saying diplomacy, because I do want to throw one thing out there. And this is, I think, goes to the jaw rulification of social media.
You can't say that enough for me. I love
that. I love this. This is my new favorite term. And I'm so glad you found an in, Nagin, because there are flashpoint words that have been used that aren't necessarily accurate, but you can't be that guy and say, so again, you know, using the term like genocide or something, you don't want to be the guy on social media, or you don't want to be the guy in life being like, well, actually, it's only genocide if it's in the sparkling region of France. Like, you can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're quibbling over war crimes. Right. Here, right.
Yeah. Right.
But there is an intent there. And I just want to be careful to start, you know, to say that, like, we can, when we say, like, tone down the temperature, if you accuse, like, a country that is a legitimate country that's fighting a terrorist organization whose stated goal is the eradication of your people, which is actually genocide, mm-hmm. and then accuse also the other government of doing genocide in response to that, there's no winning because now we both sides the issue. And I think one of the steps that we have to take is the diplomatic route. And it doesn't feel great because we're talking about real innocent human lives. And we're also talking about, you know, not engaging in escalation, right? Because because it's not just heated political talk. There are people who are dying, and children who are dying, and it doesn't need to happen. And whatever the past was is not working. And I think about we're just after Yom Kippur, and we talk a lot about forgiveness. And it's not just for us; it's also for people who have done harm to us. And I think forgiveness and diplomacy have to be the move, and humanity, seeing the humanity in each other is the only way forward. Otherwise, we're in this cycle forever, using the same accusatory jargon back and forth with each other that will not solve the issue.
Yeah.
And will just put people, make them more entrenched in their own camp, in their own echo chamber, which is not helpful. And we've seen the destruction that that can cause. So if there's any way to move forward, I think it has to be with humanity and with a certain level of, of accepting that we have to move on past this, that whatever happened before, we need to find a way to move beyond this for a better future for everyone.
Amen, hear, Benari. Let's move on to a much dumber subject, which is the Republican primary.
Great place for a first date, by the way.
Folks, Mike Pence, I know this is really sad for all of you, is out of the race. He dropped out.
Oh, word?
Yeah, no more Mike Pence. Nikki Haley is inching up and maybe going to be a viable competitor to Ron DeSantis, but not to Trump. Trump still beats all of them. But there is a world where Nikki Haley could do some leapfrogging. I don't know. But in Iowa, she's looking pretty good. And then here's the third piece of news. Some dude named Dean Phillips is doing a primary challenge against Biden, which is hilarious. He has no name ID in among Fake the Nation hosts.
He's pulling at 0% on Fake the Nation at the moment.
So, any general thoughts on Nikki Haley or Dean Phillips or Mike Pence?
One on Mike Pence, which is like, I'm pretty sure this is the first time in my lifetime that a former vice president didn't even have a remote shot in hell.
Wild.
It's insane. Like, because used to, it was like, remember when I was a kid, it was like given, like, well, the vice president will run, and oftentimes he wins, you know, like that's how that happens a lot. And like, you know, Gore obviously not only had a good shot, technically kind of probably won, but
yes.
Like, you know, obviously Biden's here, like Cheney never made the run at it, but I have zero doubt that he could have at least polled very high. But like, dude, Mike
Pence, he had already spent 8 years being president.
So. Yeah. Oh, we all know why he didn't do it. I'm just saying the guy definitely could have, George, you know, H.W. Bush. But Mike Pence, like, and obviously a lot of it had to do with like how he divided the Trump supporters in the wake of January 6th or whatever. But he's also just like such a criminally boring son of a bitch. And then on Nikki Haley and this Dean Phillips feller, people who donate to these people's campaigns, they substantial amounts of money. How are they smart enough to have made those substantial amounts of money, but dumb enough not to realize I have just thrown this in the trash and lit it on fire?
Well, I think because it's already on fire. So right. It's hard to know how much trash you're just feeding you're fueling the flames at this point.
A fireplace that they keep going. It's actually quite cozy.
Yeah, it's quite cozy, but the stench is unbearable because it's just like burning rubber and fucking
plastic, dangerous substances.
But I think all of like the toxins it's giving off alone, but this is a race to see who, they're all performing for Donald Trump. This is not a presidential primary. These are audition tapes for who Donald Trump is going to pick, because he is not only far and away the nominee for the Republican party, he is the only candidate that they have. I mean, in reality, he doesn't even have to do any of this because it's a given. And when you look at any of the support, these are all Trump supporters. That's not even a Republican party. It's the party of Trump masquerading as the party formerly known.
So you're
as
saying,
the
are you saying
party.
That these people are trying to are auditioning to be VP?
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense.
I sort of feel like I see that obviously Vivek Ramaswamy is literally like auditioning to be VP with his just fawning over Trump like on the debate stage or whatever. But I think Nikki Haley feels like something of an actual human being to me, and obviously Chris Christie is just he's just out there to like talk shit about Trump. He's not trying to be VP, but
glad he's there though.
I'm glad he's there too. But I feel like Nikki Haley is like an actual candidate.
Yeah,
am I crazy?
And in 2012, she would be a front runner, but there it's not 2012. Right. Like the normal rules no longer apply. I mean, where's her constituency? Or more accurately, where's her Republican fan base? Like, who's voting for her in that primary?
I'm gonna say the people that vote for like Joe Manchin in West Virginia, I could picture them voting for Nikki Haley.
Okay, but those people didn't vote for
conservative Democrats.
I was gonna say, but like those aren't necessarily the primary voters.
Right. They're not the fire breathing.
They're not the fire breathers. And so, I think we have to be real. You know, that system is broken. I don't know what else to say about that. It's definitely broken on the Republican side.
Look, if we're playing fantasy football here and I get to draft, if I get to draft a scenario, I would love it if the Republicans were forced to have to choose a woman over an old white man, because they can't do it. Like, if she runs against Biden now, and for the record, this is me saying this, I'm not insanely thrilled to have Biden again. I wish that we had a young Obama-esque type that could lead us, like, but if it's between Biden and Trump's Republican Party, I take Biden all day. So, like, dude, please let it be Nikki Haley, because they're not going to vote for her. They just won't go. They can't get excited to do that.
But they don't even have a platform. You know, they don't have a platform anymore. There's nothing to run for or on.
Yeah.
So this is like such a going through the motions. You know, just it really is disturbing to see so many people who are supposedly serious people analyze this as if any of them have a shot in hell.
Right.
They know what has happened here. This is a cult. This is cult-like behavior. And their number one guy is we're up to how many indictments? He can't be on the campaign trail. He's got to fit in speeches in between his ongoing trials.
He's going to actually be speaking right next week at one of the trials. I truly have lost track, but I think it's the New York one. And next week, and I think Donnie Jones is going to be speaking. Yeah. And I think Ivanka also might have to go do a thing.
And by the way, if he goes to jail, he can still be elected president.
Right.
Right. Which I think is a way.
Which is
insane. I don't know how the timing of this will work out with the primary schedule. But let's say he loses one of these cases or whatever, and it's a significant enough punishment, whatever the, you know, I can see voters being like, all right, guys, like he's
but
a convicted
Republican
criminal.
Voters. The question will be, is that enough for Republican voters to finally turn on him?
That's the big question. Yeah, that's the big question. Who knows?
I know plenty of Republicans who have since lost favor in Trump. Like, they voted for him the first time, and then the second time, they didn't vote for Biden. They just didn't vote. And now they see this as, this guy's actively hurting our party. He needs to go away. However, I know an equal amount of people who the fact that he might go to jail is emboldening them even more, because right. it turns him into Jesse James to these people.
Right.
Like, he is, you know what I mean? Like, they're looking at him as a John Dillinger type. Like, they know this is all wrong, and like,
right.
hey, look at him. He's basically, like, he's becoming the Christ figure that
yeah.
they've all made him out to be, and this is his cross to bear for our sins.
It's literally the demagogue that mm-hmm. the founders warned us against in a democracy. It's, you know, it's what they talk about. It's like, just be careful about, like, fast-talking, you know, con men who come and sell you a bill of goods and become a cult of personality, because,
right.
you know, they can easily take over the democracy. And then you're in, you know, you're in a dictatorship. You're in an autocratic rule. And the Republicans are happy to go with that because they love their daddy. You know, they love their big daddy who's just like in a, you know, and the more you hate him, the more they love it. And you do have Republicans who are like Adam Kinzinger. But guess who's not in elected power anymore? Adam Kinzinger. Like, the ones who are sane and reasonable are being forced out. They're not just being forced out of their party. They're being forced out of government by their party.
Right.
And so that's the trend we should really be looking at, in my opinion, and saying, like, not just like, what the hell is wrong with the Republican Party, but like, what is the Republican Party?
Right.
I mean, that is, what is the Republican Party? Hey, okay, well, we'll leave it right there on a question that nobody can answer. And let us move on to our final topic, topic number three. So there is a list of the most promiscuous countries in the world. And I stopped fucking for just one second to peruse that list. And before reading it, my question for you guys is, like, before you looked at the list, did you think that America would be in the top 10 or not of the most promiscuous countries?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, top 10, maybe, just because we're such a melting pot and thus have a bunch of other cultures. So, like, the other top 9 live here as well and have, like, you know, influenced us. But I definitely feel like a European country would have to be number 1.
Yeah, I just thought numbers-wise we'd be up there, you know, like, because of the melting pot. But yeah, I was actually a little bummed to find out that we were still
I didn't look at the list.
Oh, yeah, you know, okay, so you should be bummed. We are not in the top 10. The winner of the list is Australia.
I knew it. I fucking knew it. Because, dude, Australia is just horny, stupid America. And I love them so much. They're the rednecks of that side of the world. God bless them.
They have the second most sexual partners after Turkey. They have an average, but by the way, Turkey.
I gotta say, that's the most surprising thing to me, is that Turkey is
absolutely
getting down.
Like, what? I've been to Turkey, did not feel sexual vibes in the air. But in Australia, they have an average of 13.3 sexual partners. And
lifetime?
81% of Australians said that it's either morally acceptable or not at all a moral issue to be. To have premarital sex. So they're totally into premarital sex, which felt like an old school question. I was like, oh, was this survey conducted in 1980? Like, who, what are we
in Alabama?
Also, there's an interesting factor to consider with Australia, is that prostitution is legal in Australia, which I actually didn't realize. And so that might, you know, just generally have something to do with it. Although, this is the other thing that's interesting about Australia. And I don't know, Corey, if they will continue to be the rednecks of that part of the world with this statistics, they have their overall STD rate was on the lower end of the spectrum. Now, I don't know where rednecks are on the STD rate.
We're rednecks on STDs.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah.
Here's
we're rednecks
the,
on
here's
STDs.
The thing. In, but here's
or
the thing.
Nay.
Here's why Australia is rednecks. In order to know you have an STD, you have to go get it checked out. And rednecks do not do that. All right. So your statistics are lopsided. There's plenty of people in Australia running around with gonorrhea that just have no idea. And it's probably especially worse because, as we know, in Australia, when you have sex, your penis actually goes counterclockwise. It goes the other way. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. You jizz inward. Yeah, let's
that's right.
See. The
and the woman on top is missionary in Australia.
Exactly. And she's holding a kookaburra on her head
and playing a didgeridoo.
This is the most
fantastic.
This is the most shock jock radio segment that I've ever
just
had
became,
on the show.
This just became the morning show. Hey, let's go to the guy in the box. He's literally in a box right now. Whoa, hey.
There we go.
Good day, mate. Throw this shrimp on the Bobby.
Okay, right. I want to point out. I want to point out a really obvious name from the list of the country on the list, and a really non-obvious one. An obvious one at number two, Brazil. That
yeah,
feels
I thought
so
they'd be
right
number one.
To me.
Brazil, 1,000%. I mean,
yeah.
I thought them or Spain would be number one, frankly.
Now, I want to say,
like, Rio de Janeiro alone.
There's just
right,
hot.
Probably,
when you're in Brazil, yeah, you're just struck with hotness and G-strings, and it's, like, incredible.
We name shaving our privates after Brazil, you know, so, like,
that's
of
so
course.
True. That's true. Yeah, and you never forget. Okay, a big surprise to me was that on this top, this list has 45 countries on it. France is not ranked in the top 45 of promiscuity.
I knew you would bring it back around to Nagin in Paris.
I mean,
that we'd come back to France.
Is, like, no offense. I did a bunch of smooching in France. I don't know who that would be an offense to, but no offense. I did a lot of smooching in Paris, and I cannot believe that everyone is not smooching in Paris. That entire city is literally designed for
you. Wrecked them, Nagin. You wrecked them.
I don't know if you know this, but in France, this is true. The wine consumption has actually been steadily going down since 1920.
Yeah.
People are less drunk in France all the time now. The fact that there's a
segment on it.
Oh, we did?
And on Fake the Nation, we did a segment on it, yeah.
Well, was I on it?
But yes, we talked about the decline in sale. Of course we did a segment on French wine, obviously. Needless to say. But yeah, so they've been steadily declining. They're less drunk.
Less drunk, and is all these women are stinky. You know, like, I don't know. It's just it's a wild culture over there. That's
also
my best French.
I think there's probably, like, the French snootiness of, like, oh, everyone thinks all we do is fuck. Like,
right.
And they, so, like, just to prove a point, they won't.
Oh, yeah, no, right. Wait, you guys. France is number 25. What am I talking about? France is number 25.
That's
me being sick talking. It's still low.
It's out of the top 20, man.
That's crazy.
Out of the top 20.
For being the place that is, like, the stereotypical, like, menage a trois, that's their word.
It's isn't French the language of love? Like,
yes,
you know. So
French kissing, all this stuff, like Pepe Le Pew, for the love of God.
French fries, all the good stuff that goes
everything
in your mouth is from France.
Yeah.
Now here's another interesting one. India is number 45. And I just want to say, for as good as they are increasing their population size, you'd think that would also there would be a lot of boning involved in that.
Yeah, but they're pretty big on arranged marriages still, correct?
Yeah.
I've got
an
Indian buddy who he's fought his parents tooth and nail on it for years at their disgust. So, I mean, it's probably a little hard to be promiscuous when you have to get a permission slip, would say.
Yeah.
And I think some of these, I think there's probably an efficiency there, right? Like, it's for this purpose, and then I spend the rest of my time doing these other things. So I think there's, like, an efficiency to the sex. There's a purpose to it. Again, I come back to the USA, not to be, like, so American-centric, but, like, we gotta fucking up our game here, man.
That's right.
Like,
up them numbers,
like,
up.
What do we
now,
get our numbers up, man?
For the record, Corey, since you didn't look at the list, what number do you think we are? I'm just a little guessing.
So you said
Corey.
we're not in the top 10,
we're
you
not
said,
in the top
correct?
10.
Oh, God. I'm going to say, let's see, Paris was, or France was what?
25.
25. Okay, I'm going to wild card it and say that we somehow beat France and we're number 24.
Very close. We're number 15. We did beat France.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So USA.
USA.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm sure the state of Indiana really screwed up our stats in that one. What I'm saying?
Just Mike Pence alone screwed up our stats. We probably could have made it to the top 10 if it wasn't for him.
We made it in the top. Yeah, we made it to the top 15 on Florida alone, the Australia of America.
I think in the wake of the horrific Dobbs decision, this is actually a great talking point for us to be like, look at this. You've knocked us out of these right wingers have knocked us out of the top 10.
That's right.
Like, we got to get back in there, and the first thing is codifying Roe.
Right.
Like
first. First order of business, codify Roe. Second order of business, can we also increase our math testing scores? Just like
that's right. Both are related, and there's a fun way to do that, and that involves promiscuity.
Yeah, in Alabama, if you get 100 on your math test, you get to fuck your cousin. There you go. One right there. I can say it. I'm from Georgia.
Folks, now that we've talked about all of these countries and their sexual proclivities, I want to hear what your sex goals are for America. And
that's great, because you can find me on at Benari Lee on Instagram at Blue Sky on X.
Folks, that is the end of the show. And I would love for you to follow these two fabulous panelists and all the things that they do. Benari Lee Poulton, where do they do that?
Yeah, at Benari Lee. And again, let's get those numbers up, people. Go USA.
Corey, Ryan Forrester, where do they get you?
I'm at Corey R. Forrester on all of the socials, but also please subscribe to my Substack. You can go to bonuscorey.com. I just finished my first audio drama called Colonel Cornbread in the Case of the Confederate Ruby, and it was a blast. So you can do that for $5 a month, which, as we learned, I believe is 29 fortune cookies per Nagin's math.
Folks, you know where to find me. All things I do. I'm going to be in Philadelphia. I'm going to be in D.C. At the Anthem, actually, in D.C. And then in Philly, I don't remember the name of the venue, but it's with the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour, so you guys should go see that. That's next weekend. I'm also going to be in Reston, Virginia, but I believe that show is sold out, so double-check. And I'm going to be going back to Chicago for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I'll let you know when that gets a little bit closer. And just a quick reminder, the Golden Bachelor recap will not be coming out on Friday as per usual, but it will be coming out on Monday, November 6th. So get ready for some delightful Golden Bachelor recaps coming out on Monday, November 6th. Otherwise, where to find all of my things. And I want to thank everyone who makes the show possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum. Thanks to our fantastic theme music by Gabi Alter. You can reach us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/NagineFarsat to support the show. And we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.